Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a Gibson's Bookstore podcast. I'm Ryan, my pronouns are she, her.
I'm Joe, my pronouns are they, them.
Welcome back, Joe!
Thank you!
It's good to have you back!
It's been weird, it's been a really long time.
It has. I think the last time we recorded together was February.
I think it was like the first week of February, too.
It was definitely early in February. Definitely early February because when I was looking through my list of books that I needed to talk about today, I saw one that I finished reading on February 9th that I did not talk about last time we recorded. And I was like, oh, no.
I know our little, like, lay down display is still all romance novels from Valentine's Day because we haven't recorded. So I'll just say up front, like, so I had back surgery. I was out of the bookstore for almost 2 months. I'm now back on, like, short shifts and sporadically, like, not my usual schedule, but I'm glad to be back. I'm going to be leading the book club in May, which I'm very excited for. It's Midsummer Night's Dream. Woo! I am so ready.
Yes.
And so it's been a weird time.
It has. It has. We are glad to have you back.
Thank you.
Oh, the bookstore is not the same without you. So today we are doing the bonus episode that I promised you all. If you listen to my interviews, then you know that I teased a bonus episode with Joe, where we're literally just going to hang out and talk about all the things we read while Joe is recovering from back surgery.
I read almost 30 books, y'all.
I'm so hyped.
Was wild. Oh my God. So many movies. It was a time.
Mm-hmm.
It was a time.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited to hear about specifically like your favorite books that got you through back surgery recovery, because like what a great pitch. Like, what a great review. Like, this book helped me recover from back surgery. Like, I just love that. I think all of your staff picks for the next like 6 months should be like, this book helped me get through back surgery.
Couldn't sit up for more than half an hour at a time, so this is what I spent my time doing. And I did a lot of audiobooks because like, my brain was pretty fuzzy, and reading physical books was sometimes a struggle, but I listened to a lot of books.
That's good. I mean, like, honestly, reading physical books for me is always kind of a struggle. Like, on like a good day, sometimes it'll be a struggle. So, just, you know, right off the top, shout out to Libra FM. We love you.
It came in clutch for me. So
they are the best. Okay, I am also, before we officially jump in, because I know not everybody listens to the end credits, how dare you, but I know, I get it, I'm a podcast listener. Indie Bookstore Day is at the end of this month. It is the last Saturday in April, which I believe is the 29th. Yep. We are doing lots of fun little things. We are one of a very small amount of stores that is doing Libro FM's golden ticket promotion.
Ooh, what is that?
This is so cool. So there are, I mean, I want to say there's like only 25 stores or something that got picked for this. It was like first come, first serve. It's a very small amount. I might have that number totally wrong, but I know it was super limited. We have a literal golden ticket.
Okay.
If you find this golden ticket on Indie Bookstore Day, it will be somewhere in the store. It will be accessible.
Don't destroy the store.
Don't destroy the store. It won't be inside a book. It will be somewhere. Okay. If you find it, you can redeem that for a year of free audiobooks.
God, can you tell me where it is? I'm just going to
I don't know. I don't know where it is yet. I literally haven't decided where I'm going to shelve it yet. But yes, it is good for 12 credits.
Wow.
So yeah, a free audiobook a month for a full year. It will be the type of thing where, like, if you find it, you have to, you know, bring it to the register. to let us know that you found it. We have a photo release form for you to sign so that we can take your picture with the ticket and send it to Libre FM so that they can post all of the winners. And then it has a QR code on it for you to scan and get your free audiobooks.
That's so cute. It's very
exciting. I'm so, so happy that we get to do this. So that's one of the things that's going on. And we also,
I was going to say, wait till you see the display everybody's been working on. It's so cute, y'all.
You guys are going to flip. I'm not even going to, you just have
No, we're not teasing it. It's just adorable.
You just have to come in and see it for yourself. We also are going to be doing Indie Bookstore Day Bingo.
Ooh.
So I have created a bingo card. Not unlike our, you know, like reading challenge, but it is, there are 25 spaces. And in order to cross off a space, you have to purchase a book or item that is applicable. You can double dip, but no more than two spaces per thing. And if you get bingo, you get 5 entries into our Indie Bookstore Day grand raffle prize, which the prize is one of every single Indie Bookstore Day exclusive item.
And there are some good items
this year. There are some really good items this year. If you fill the entire bingo card, if you get all, well, I was going to say 24 things plus the free space, you get 25 entries into that grand prize raffle. Yeah, it is a big deal. You will also obviously have a chance to purchase these exclusive items if you if you don't want to take your chances with the raffle. But if you want to try for the raffle, you will get one of each. And then you can also get raffle tickets by purchasing hardcovers, purchasing staff picks. Like, we'll have some opportunities to get raffle tickets even if you're not participating in the bingo. But if you are participating in the bingo and also buying, like, those hardcovers, you'll get two raffle tickets if it's also applicable to the bingo card. So, just, you know, you have an opportunity to get, like, a lot of raffle tickets if you participate in our bingo. So that'll be fun. We are also, I'm very excited for this, we are going to have local authors as booksellers for a day.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
I know. I don't have the full lineup yet, but make sure you're on our social media. We're going to be posting who the authors are, what times they'll be here, and like what genre they will be hand selling. So they're actually like, they've given us like a generic genre that they want to hype up, but then they've also given us specific books that they are going to hand sell specifically, which is so cute.
I love this.
I know. I think we're gonna make like a playbill of like who's who and what. Incredible. I'm so excited.
I'm going to have to come in. I never work Saturdays, but I'm just going to, like, come and sit and be like, I'm not working, but, like, hi, I want to be around.
It's going to be so much fun. That's only, like, a few of the things we're doing for the day. There's going to be other sort of, like, just activities throughout the day that are not necessarily, like, staffed. They're, you know, like, coloring pages and, you know, write a letter to the bookstore, like, you know, simple itty-bitty little things. But we're gonna try to set up like a book haul photo spot.
Oh yeah,
which is gonna be really fun.
Yeah, working on that.
So yeah, we have some really fun stuff.
It's really exciting because I feel like this is the biggest one we've done since I started, which was in 2020.
Yes.
So like we've slowly been kind of building back up, and this feels like the first one that's like back to how it was pre pandemic, and it was always my favorite before the pandemic.
It's such a fun day. Literally the only thing that we're still not quite comfortable doing yet is food. We're not doing any food yet. Maybe someday we'll get back there. Some folks may remember the year that I made a chessboard chocolate cake for Indie Bookstore Day, including chocolate chess pieces. It's my pride and joy.
That is really impressive. And, like, you're not a baker.
I'm not a baker.
Like,
But I made a chessboard.
That's fantastic. Cake.
It was pretty exciting. So yes, we hope that you will join us for Indie Bookstore Day. You know, we will of course have like double stamps. You can fill up your stamp card super fast. Yeah, just come out and say hi and celebrate us. That's the point of Indie Bookstore Day, is for you, the readers and the customers, to kind of support us and show us that you really do like us.
Yeah.
And wear your Gibson's merch if you have it, because I will probably be taking photos of everyone who wears Gibson's merch so that I can, like, highlight you on our social media. So if you are okay with your photo being taken, come on in and, like, make sure you're wearing, like, a Gibson's t-shirt or hat or something like that. Anyway, so that, again, Indie Bookstore Day, April 29th, all day. Come on in. Come hang out with us. Shall we jump in?
I think so. And do we want to kind of alternate maybe like, have one of us talking for an hour?
And I think there's at least a tiny bit of overlap. I know of at least one that we both read.
Yeah.
So I can start with that one, because I believe you also read Camp Damascus?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
So Camp Damascus, I know I talked about this a little bit on the podcast, but I just want to highlight it again, because again, it comes out this summer. It's by Chuck Tingle, who we love. He is
so great.
Wild on the internet.
Yeah, like, please look up Chuck Tingle. I mean, I think there was one episode where we read some of his titles, but, like, if you missed that, please go seek them out.
I adore him. So, yeah, I mean, I loved this book. I was so impressed with Chuck's horror imagery.
It was very cinematic.
Yes!
Like, it worked really well on that level, I thought.
Yeah.
Which is sometimes really hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was glad that you read it, because, you know, it deals with, like, conversion camps and things like that. And, you know, as a cis straight white person, I was like, I mean, I love this, but you know, and I know that Chuck Tingle is queer. He is a member of the community, so, you know, I was like, I think he handled this really well, but I did want someone else who is a part of the community to actually give feedback on that.
Yeah, and I do. I think it was handled well, and I think kind of the balance of religion, or, like, it wasn't, I think you had said this before, but, like, it wasn't all Christians are evil sort of storyline. Like, it was respectful of the fact that there is something that people get out of religion, and while still recognizing that there are some really, really harmful things in some of them. So I think it did a really good job of balancing that. And it was a fun read. I think, you know, conversion therapy with demons is a great premise.
Yeah. I loved it.
And when does that come out? Is it this summer? I know it's this summer, but is it, like, July?
You know what? I can tell you. One second.
Okay.
It comes out July 18th.
Nice.
And I am so excited.
And it's a good summer horror. Like,
it's very good summer horror, because it's like summer camp vibes.
Yeah.
And it is just wild and kind of unhinged. It is awesome. It's such a fun, like, slashery kind of vibe to it. Like,
it
totally has the same feeling of, like, when it's a hot summer day and you're watching, like, Friday the 13th.
Yes. Yeah.
It's, like, the same type of, like, it's summer, it's horror, it's gonna be a little gory, it's gonna be a little scary, there might be a message to it.
It's awesome. It's gonna be one of the really good summer horror books, I think.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see what else he does.
I know.
In this area, in his Tor Nightfire journey.
Yeah, because this is his first, like, traditionally published book
at
all, and then first horror book, as far as I'm aware.
As far as I know, this is the first. Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it'll be really interesting to see
how
he grows.
Absolutely. All right, what's one that you have read that and loved?
Okay. So my favorite, it's very likely going to be my favorite book of the year, I think. Yellow Face by R.F. Kuang.
Amazing. Can't wait.
Oh my God. Y'all, this book, like, you can't put it down. It is so good. So it's a satire of the publishing industry. It is so sharp and well written. It is about a white woman, June Hayward, who is an author. She had a debut. It kind of flopped. She went to Yale for her MFA, and one night she's hanging out with somebody else from her cohort. They're not really friends, but they're like around each other, and so while at her apartment, this friend Athena Liu shows her the manuscript she's been working on, which she writes on a typewriter because she's very pretentious in that way. So, like, her editor's never seen it.
Oh, no.
And then, for some reason, they decide to have a pancake eating contest.
Oh, no.
And Athena chokes to death.
Oh, my God!
Yeah. And this is, like, the first chapter, y'all.
What an opening!
It's fantastic. And so, this book that Athena has written is about Chinese laborers in World War One. Athena was a Chinese-American woman, and June obviously is not, but she really likes this book. Mm. And, like, it deserves to go out into the world. But it's, like, it's kind of rough. She needs to make some edits to it. So she does. So, like, maybe she'll just publish it, like, under both of their names, because she did a lot of work, but, you know, by the end, it's like, she wrote more of it than Athena did.
Oh my God.
And, like, she really deserves this credit. So she sends it to her agent under her own name.
Oh, my God.
And there's a huge bidding war, and she gets a much more prestigious contract with, like, a much bigger publisher, or not even bigger, but, like, more elite,
yeah.
Like, oh, fancier gosh. Publisher. And because it is about Chinese laborers, you know, there are some, it's in the current climate, the publisher thinks it would be difficult to sell this book written by a white woman. So, like, June starts going by her middle name instead of her last name, which is Song. You know, her mom, it's because her mom's a hippie, so she's publishing under Juniper Song. It's not lying. She's not lying. This is her name.
Oh my God.
And she takes a kind of ambiguous author photo.
Of course she does.
And then this book goes out into the world and gets rave reviews. But then there are people who are like, there's something off about this book.
Oh.
Like, and they start digging into Juniper and are like, oh, this is definitely a white woman trying to, like, pass herself, without outwardly lying, just trying to pass herself off as a person of color.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a Twitter account that starts called Athena Liu's Ghost.
Amazing.
That starts bringing up the fact that actually, Athena had been talking to her editor about this book she was writing, and maybe Juniper Song never wrote this book.
Incredible.
It gets, like, almost Macbeth in this,
yes.
like, haunting, she, like, devolves into madness, becoming obsessed with all of the internet backlash, and it is just I gave it to our coworker Sam, who also devoured it,
mm-hmm.
and she was like, the reading the Twitter parts was like the most anxiety inducing thing of, like, just, and so it's just so brilliant and so well done. I cannot recommend this book enough. I think it's going to be one of the best of the year. And I have not read any other R.F. Kuang, but like, now I'm gonna, because this was so good.
I can't wait for that one. I can't wait to read that.
Oh my god, it's so good.
And I know that a lot of I will snag that from you. I know that a lot of booksellers are like absolutely feral about this book.
Yeah, it was one of those books where I was like, oh, this looks interesting, and then I was in the middle of another book, and I was at the advanced copy came into the store. I grabbed it. I started flipping through it on my break, and it just never stopped. Like, I couldn't read anything else till it was done.
Oh, God, I love when that happens.
Oh, so good.
That is amazing. When does that come out? Do we know?
I believe it is in May. I should have written this down.
I didn't write down any of these.
Yeah, May 16th. Happy birthday to me. My birthday's not the 16th, but it's close.
It's right around there. We're all May babies. Incredible. Another one that I think I talked about this on the podcast when I was in the middle of reading it. I don't know if I talked about it once I finished it, but just in case, because it's been a while. I read Big Swiss by Jen Began, which was, it was very good. It was,
I've heard good things.
I don't usually do like a straight lit fic type book. But the premise just really got me. It is a woman who transcribes recordings for a sex therapist.
Love it.
You know, confidentially, of course. Like, she has signed all these, like, NDAs and everything. In transcribing these sessions, she begins to fall for one of the clients who she refers to as Big Swiss, because it's this woman with an ambiguous accent who, you know, she just like imagines her as this like big Swiss woman. She's not really wrong. She goes to the dog park and runs into someone and recognizes in speaking to her, oh my God, this is Big Swiss.
Oh.
And so she lies about her name, I believe, and they strike up a friendship and then an affair. And some hijinks ensue. It's one of those books where you're reading it and you're like, oh, don't do that. Oh, you could have avoided this. But I liked it a lot. The writing is fantastic. Nice. The characters are really, really fun. And, like, it's very much a character book. It's very much a character study and less of a, like, plot book, which I usually am not able to distinguish those. Like, Storygraph will ask, like, was this more plot or character? And I'm usually like, I don't know, a mix?
A mix, yeah. That's, like, half
this
the time.
This was a character book. This was, you are spending all of your time with the characters, not a ton happens.
Yeah.
Except that they have an affair and then like things happen beyond that.
Nice.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. It was on a lot of you know, best of lists, which is good. I'm also just gonna kind of rapid fire through a few here that I read kind of back to back to back. I finished Don't Fear the Reaper by Stephen Graham
Jones. That was what I wanted to talk about.
I loved it so much. So it is the sequel to My Heart is a Chainsaw, which, as you know, is a love letter to slashers. This one continues that love letter.
And to sequels specifically, which, like, the horror movie sequel is just, like, such
a thing. Oh, God. It is so good to be back in Proof Rock with Jade. I loved it.
It was so good. And it just, it was, there were moments, there were a lot of homages to specific slashers, but, like, it was so Scream in so many moments. That
Absolutely.
Was, like, I was, like, which, that's my personal favorite slasher.
I do love Scream.
Like, Scream's everything. Yeah, it was just, it was so good, and like it made me like the first one even more, I feel like, because it was just like, no, I love these characters, like 100%. No, they're this is incredible, like I think it can be really hard, especially the second book in a trilogy, like that middle book can be rough, and if you don't pull it off, like then the trilogy doesn't work.
So highly recommend both My Heart is a Chainsaw and Don't Fear the Reaper. I also read a book called The Jigsaw Man, which I think we had an ALC of, which I started because I thought it was a horror novel. It's more of a thriller. It is it's like a serial killer. It's a crime thriller. And it is fascinating because the serial killer is like, he's like removing body parts from the victims, and it's, I don't want to get too deep into it, because that's part of the fun, is like uncovering what's going on. But it is, it's a fun like crime thriller, diverse cast of characters.
Who's that by?
Nadine Matheson.
Okay.
So yeah, that was one that kind of took me by surprise. I started listening to it because I was like, oh, this sounds like a horror novel, and then I was like, oh, it's a crime thriller. Okay. Okay, I'm on board. And yeah, you're kind of like following the detective on throughout the investigation, and some things hit a little too close to home, and there are cases that you didn't think were connected, and then they become connected, and it's really interesting. It's a good one. If you like thrillers, if you like crime thrillers in particular, that is a good one. And then also I read for the JOAG book club back in like February, White Smoke by Tiffany D. Jackson.
I liked
that one. It's YA horror with a very diverse, it focuses on a Black family. It's you know, it does kind of boil down into like a gentrification is bad moral in a way. There are some other things that happen, but it is very much like, you know, it's eerie. It's like a little bit of like, is this a haunted house? Like, what's going on? There's like weird things happening in the community, like you know, it's this like, you know, the mom is kind of able to bring her family to this house in this strange little suburb on almost like an art scholarship type thing. Like, she's an artist and she's there kind of like as a residency. And so her family moves into this very white neighborhood, and weird vibes
from the beginning.
Weird things happening in the house. Just everything is weird, everything is creepy, everything is uncomfortable, but it's really good. I liked it a lot, so that was that. What about you?
So another one that I really liked that I read like in the height of my recovery was Silver Nitrate by Sylvia Moreno Garcia, which is her new one coming out in July.
Amazing.
It is so weird, y'all. I loved it. But it was so weird. So it's very much an homage to black and white horror movies.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, you're just going to want to sit and, like, watch all of the Universal Monster movies after this.
Good. Okay.
I love it. And it's a really character-driven horror, which I think is often is not super common necessarily.
Yeah, I think she in particular really excels in that. When I think of like Mexican Gothic and Daughter of Dr. Murrow was very character based.
Yeah, and so it's about two friends, Montserrat, who is an audio tech, who is kind of slowly being pushed out of the movie business by men who are just like refusing to take her seriously.
Of course.
And her best friend from childhood, Tristan, who is a washed up telenovela star who had his career kind of went down the drain when he and his co-star slash girlfriend got in a terrible car wreck and she died.
Oh no.
And so they're both just kind of listless. Like, neither of them know what they're doing, and they're not quite sure what their next steps are. And Tristan moves into a new apartment building, and one of his neighbors is one of he and Montserrat's favorite directors from, like, older horror movies. Okay. And this book, it all takes place in the 90s. I should have said that.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. And so they have dinner with him, and he mentions that he was working on a movie that ended up getting, like, canceled, and he really wants help finishing it up because it was a magic spell. The book, the movie itself was magic.
What?
Oh my god!
And so he has still has some of the film. It's silver nitrate, which, like, as somebody who's taken many classes on, like, preservation, it's just like, oh my god, you should not have any nitrate film anywhere near you. Like, that needs to be taken care of by a professional. He's like, it's in my freezer. Which, if you do find nitrate film, that is where it should go until you find somebody else. But, like, that's the stuff that burns.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Like, burns. But for the magic to work, it has to be on the silver nitrate film. So he has this, but he doesn't have audio for it. And for the spell to work, it needs audio. So he gets Tristan and Montserrat to help him dub it. And they're just kind of humoring him. And then afterward, Tristan gets a role for the first time in a long time. Aww. And a few small things start to go well in all of their lives. And then things go very, very badly.
Oh, no.
Everything takes a turn. Tristan starts seeing ghosts.
Oh, my God.
And Montserrat starts researching the man who was helping make this movie, the one who was the wizard magician in the group. And he has an interesting story.
Oh,
and
God.
You know, he left Germany in the late 30s.
Uh-oh.
And we get into some Nazi occultism, and
oh my God.
Wild, and like it's so good. I loved the characters so much, and it is just one of those books, kind of like Don't Fear the Reaper, where you're like, this person knows this genre so well and is doing it perfectly. And
that's awesome.
It was so good. Again, another one that Sam read and was like, oh, I love this. So
that's awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's so good. And then I'm going to go through a couple, like, little rapid-fire ones. I have others that I want to talk more in detail about. But I read a lot of graphic novels. The Adventure Zone, The 11th Hour, just came out.
Yes!
And it was perfect. It's always perfect. I love it. Cannot believe we have, like, 3 left, basically.
I know. Well, I hope that they do some of their other Adventure Zone.
True. Things. But, like, balance.
But balance is
almost
done,
over.
And it's crazy.
Wild.
Listeners, if you have not listened to the podcast, The Adventure Zone, I am here to tell you, as someone who knows a little bit about D&D but doesn't really play D&D or whatever, it is so enjoyable, whether you have Dungeons and Dragons knowledge or not.
Yeah.
It is the McElroy brothers, who, you know, have my brother and me and a bunch of other podcasts, playing Dungeons and Dragons with their dad. When the podcast starts, they, like, literally none of them know anything about D&D. Like, I think Travis, like, played twice in college. Like,
tripping their way through it.
Yes, and it is so delightful, and they're very funny, but then you go through this arc, the balance arc, and by the time it ends, guys, this is one of the greatest stories ever told.
Like, it will make you cry. Like, I think, what is the thing in the, like, finale? They're like, 3 nerds played D&D so hard they made themselves cry.
Yes.
Because, like,
literally,
it's so good, and it is yeah, I am always astonished listening to it, and especially, yes, like, as you progress, because they definitely started it as kind of like a, oh, and silly, like, it's definitely the first section of it is, you know, based a lot on a pre-existing D&D game, like, that they were kind of cribbing from, and then as it worked and they enjoyed it, they kind of, they spread out into their own mythology, and,
It is incredible. So I think my husband has listened to just the balance arc, because they after they ended that one, they, you know, started a new game, and then they started a new game after that, and then they started a new game after that. You know, they keep playing different games. My husband has listened to balance, I think, 6 or 7 times.
It's such a comfort thing. And it's every so time a graphic novel comes out, I'm like, oh, wait, I need to listen to this again. Yeah. Like, even if it's just one of the arcs within the balance story.
So I highly recommend listening to that. And then I would also recommend listening to my interview with Clint McElroy.
Yeah.
On this podcast. Clint is
fantastic. So he's
the best. He's the dad.
Yeah. And
he was so, so delightful to talk to. After, I don't think I have it recorded, like, I don't think it's in the interview episode, but after he and I finished the, like, official interview part, he was just, like, showing me his office. Oh, like, we're over Zoom, it was in the middle of the pandemic, and he was just like, oh, and look at this thing that I have. Oh, and look at this thing that I have. And, like, I got to bring my husband in so he could, like, virtually meet him. Because I was
so
like,
cute.
I was like, Clint, this might be weird, but, like, my husband's listened to Balance so many times. Like, do you mind just saying hi? And he was like, I'd love to meet him. Like, he's just so sweet.
And the graphic novels have really been, like, his project.
Yes.
Like, the brothers wrote the story because they through playing the game, but, like, Clint has really been the one who's been, like, adapting it to graphic novel format, and does a really good job. And also, if you are, like, hesitant to listen to a podcast where, like, you're gonna have to listen to people, like, roll for initiative and stuff, like, I think that the graphic novels do stand up on their own, and it may be a good way to get into it if that's something.
Absolutely, they do. And it's really fun because the way the graphic novel is structured, you have the three characters from the campaign, the three, like, you know, made up characters.
Horny boys.
They're going through, but then you also have a character of Griffin, the DM, will, like, pop in, like, on top of the graphic novel, like over
the edge of the page,
and he'll be like, oh, and he'll just, like, say something quippy and funny, and he'll it's very cute.
It's
really, really fun. They're kind of good for, like, I would say middle school and up.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there are some jokes, I would say, that are... Yeah,
there's some, you know, flip through it first, but, you know, there's, like, a tiny bit of language, there are some jokes that happen, but in general...
But in general, I think it's a very sweet story.
The story's really good.
And, like, it stays consistent, so if you read the first one and you were like, this is good enough, like, I feel comfortable sharing this with your middle schooler, then, like, the rest of them are gonna be... good. So, yeah, so this was supposed to be my rapid fire, and we got distracted. It's okay.
I just love them
but
so much.
I love them so, so much. Oh, I read, or listened to at least, Hellbent by Leigh Bardugo, which was great. I definitely recommend that you reread Ninth House before you read it. I'm saying that as a person who did not reread Ninth House and had to, like, go and be like, wait, okay, what happened? Oh, there, okay, that's what we're referencing.
Yeah.
But it's really good, and I really like the characters and, like, their relationships to one another in this one were really, really strong.
Yes, I did reread Ninth House beforehand.
Yeah, I know.
Because I started Hellbent, and I got, like, a chapter in, and I was like, I don't quite remember how Ninth House ended.
Yeah.
So, yes, I agree. I think... I think you can do it.
Oh yeah, like I obviously. Was like, I remember this, and then I was like, oh, maybe I don't.
It is more rewarding if you reread Ninth House, or if you haven't read Ninth House yet, then just do it back to back.
Do them, yeah.
But it is fantastic.
Really, really good. To do what other books? I read Our Share of Night by Mariana Enriquez, which is translated from Spanish. She's an Argentinian author. I think Sam talked about this book like back in October.
That's the one.
Yeah, that one.
That just came out, and I was like looking at the cover. It's got a great cover.
It's got a great cover. It's neon. It's really.
I didn't realize that was the one she was talking about.
That was the one. It's a big book. It's like 600 pages. Yeah. And it is very twisty. There are different sections. So like there are a lot of time jumps, forward, backward, location jumps. Mm-hmm. You get to know these characters really well before you get into like what is happening. So the entire time you're like, okay, wait, there's a cult that these people are involved in, but I don't understand how or why. And now we're just talking about like this fight the kid had with his childhood best friend. What's happening? And it's just, it's really well written. There's a Bowie cameo in it.
Of course there is. Amazing.
It is one of two books that I'm going to talk about with a Bowie cameo. Shocking to everyone.
Amazing.
So really, really great. Yeah, love reading books in translation, and especially like I like seeing a lot. I feel like we're seeing more genre translated, like horror, and stuff. So, definitely.
And I think that's one of our like bingo or like our reading challenge. So
a book in translation.
I will. I don't know if I've read one yet. So if I haven't, that will be
And there was ALC.
Yes, yeah. I have it in my, like, queue or whatever you want to call it. Like, I've got it in my list.
I also read Chlorine by Jade Song, which just came out, which is about a Chinese-American swimmer who wants to be a mermaid. Like, really wants to be a mermaid and will do anything she can to be a mermaid.
Oh, boy.
It deals a lot with, like, trauma and body dysmorphia and the pressures applied to teenagers. So she is one of the best swimmers on her team. She needs to win. Her coach is incredibly hard on her. And she gets it into her head that the way to succeed is to be a mermaid, that she gets a feedback that she at one of her races she got disqualified because her knees were too far apart whilst doing the butterfly stroke. She needs her knees to be close together. There is some intense body horror, y'all. Like, it's gross and it's interesting and it's so weird, and I liked it a lot.
Amazing.
Also listen to Lone Women by Victor Laval. It's about a girl, young woman named Adelaide who leaves her home in California behind and her parents' corpses as well. In the house. And goes to Montana with a huge black trunk that can't be opened.
Oh boy. I'm sure it's fine.
It gets opened and people start to disappear.
Oh no.
And it is really interesting and complex and goes in a direction you are not going to expect it to go. Mm-hmm. And it deals a lot with like family and the baggage that comes along with it. I should say this is set in the early 1900s. This is a Western sort of novel. I read so many. Do you want to talk about some?
Yeah, let me talk about, because I also have read so many.
So many.
So one that I was so excited. I got to read a super, super, super early bound manuscript of the next Alex E. Harrow book.
I want that.
It's so good. It's called Starling House. And I'm just going to go ahead and read my review of it. Because I don't want to risk giving too much away. And my review is like vague enough. Welcome to Starling House. It's creepy. It's decrepit. It's probably cursed.
Creepy houses.
It's a creepy house book.
Ugh.
It sits in the middle of Eden, Kentucky, a small town plagued by mysterious deaths and disappearances. Come for the spooky house, stay for the incredibly dark, romantic, contemporary Southern Gothic fairy tale that swirls and twists and spins like a murmuration of starlings. Alex E. Harrow's latest novel is Beauty and the Beast meets The Haunting of Hill House.
Wild.
The main character is neither the feisty Opal, who will do whatever it takes to get her brother out of Eden, nor the trauma-laden, rarely glimpsed Arthur Starling, but in fact, the borderline sentient Starling House, with the temperament of an annoyed cat, a penchant for choosing its family, and a basement full of beasts. I want to live in the pages of this book. Starling House is one of the best things I've read this year.
Oh, I'm so excited.
It's so good. Like, I love everything that Alex E. Harrow writes. I could gush about her forever. This is my favorite thing she's written so far. It is unbelievably awesome. So that doesn't come out until Halloween. It literally comes out on Halloween.
I know, Halloween is a Tuesday this year, so we've got some good stuff.
So that is Starling House. You can pre-order it on our website. And keep an eye out. I might possibly get blurbed on it.
Because
they asked if they could use my review for things, and they were vague about it. So I don't know, but maybe. So I'm excited about that. It's really, really, really good. A few others that I read and loved. I read the new Rebecca Mackay, I Have Some Questions For You. She was on the podcast. Really, really good. Like campus mystery, like campus thriller.
Nice.
Just fun, exciting, dark. It's good. Murder Your Employer, The McMaster's Guide to Homicide, Volume 1 by Rupert Holmes.
Michael, watch out.
The first line in my review is literally, Michael, I would never. It's very funny. It's very dark. It's very, like, I don't know, twee. Like, it's very, pretentious in a fun way.
Nice.
It is a guy who he's like really fed up with this one like coworker, or he might be his boss actually. Now that I think about it, Murder Your Employer. Yeah. And so he's like really fed up with this guy. So he plans this whole like, I'm gonna do this and then I'm gonna do that and then I'm gonna murder this guy and totally get away with it. But it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But instead of going to jail, he gets recruited by this, like, academy where they teach homicide.
Oh.
And it's very prim and proper. And, like, it's super, like, anonymous. Like, you don't, like, he has no idea where it is. Like, they blindfold him. And it's, like, he doesn't know even how long he was, like, in the car. Like, it could have been a couple hours. It could have been an entire day. Like, it could have been 20 minutes. Like, he doesn't know. And he learns all of these different methods for murder. And it is told through, like, some of his journal entries, but then also through the stories of, I think, two or three other students of this school. And in sort of like third person, the narrator tells you what they were up to as well.
Okay.
It's awesome. It's really fun. Nice. It's really fun. Super, again, like dark, but not gory at all. I keep trying to like compare it to something because I know there's like media out there that this reminds me of. I just can't put my finger on it, but okay. It is very like proper and really, really fun. It's almost like a series of unfortunate
that
events.
That was what I was just about to ask. Yeah. That was what the vibes it's, that I was
it's
getting.
It's like that for adults.
Nice.
It's really fun. So nice. I highly recommend that one. It's one of my staff picks. You can read my review. Speaking of mermaids, I read American Mermaid by Julia Lange.
Oh, how was that?
Really good.
Oh my God. Okay.
Really good.
Need to read that.
Yeah. It's about a novelist whose novel about a mermaid kind of starts to come true a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely a commentary on Hollywood and the way, specifically the way books are adapted and the way like in her novel it's really a lens through which to look at disabled folks. It is, you know, this woman who was raised thinking that she had this disorder where she was allergic to water and she's in a wheelchair, she can't walk, she can't touch water, she has to have like a powder bath kind of, you know, like the
okay.
Like, and it turns out that no, she's a mermaid, and if she if she's in water for too long, her tail grows, and her parents knew this. And they kept her from the water. And so it's a commentary on, you know, disabled folks and things like that. But the movie that's being made out of this incredible novel, they're trying to turn it into, like, you know, a summer teen romance fling movie. And they're totally, like, losing the thread. And she is becoming enraged. And in that feminine rage, her main character is maybe showing up
I love
a little
it.
Bit. It's really I cool. It.
I feel like if we're talking about mermaids, we maybe should talk about The Salt Grows Heavy.
Absolutely!
So this is the new Cassandra Kaw.
I'm so excited. It's Cass so is coming to the bookstore on May 4th at 6:30. I am so hyped. Listeners, you might remember that Cass wrote Nothing But Blackened Teeth, which is so good and so dark and bleh, scary horror. Haunted House. And this one is about a mermaid and a plague doctor.
Naturally.
Obviously. She's on land. She can be on land. She's got real sharp teeth. She puts them to good use.
She does. And she can be on land because...
Yes.
She might have gone through a sort of Little Mermaid situation, yep. But it wasn't
great.
It wasn't a romance.
Nope.
She has a lot of rage over this experience, and she uses it.
Yeah, she does. And the plague doctor has an interesting past as well.
Yeah, it gets complicated. I think one of the things I like the most about Cass's books are they, like, structurally are so different from a lot of books that I read. Like, I definitely find myself, with both books, being unsure of, like, where I am at a certain moment. And so I think that this unsettling, I don't know, displacement in the narrative really adds to the horror. And,
Yeah,
I think that they might be one of the most unique writers in horror at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, really just, I don't have any comp titles. They're just really fascinating, incredible.
They're doing something books. Very, very cool with the genre, within the genre. And you know, this does make their books very divisive.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know a lot of people who don't love Nothing But Blackened Teeth, and I get it.
I gave it to my mom, and she was like, okay. And I was like, okay. Yeah.
I think their writing style is, you know, not for everyone, but for those who it strikes a chord with, like, it's awesome.
Yeah.
And it strikes a chord with me. I love their books.
And I would be fascinated to see what they would do with a novel, because both of these books, both Nothing But Blackened Teeth and The Salt Girl Who's Heavy, are novellas.
Yeah.
And so they're very short, and I also think that there is a really interesting thing in doing short horror. Like, I think you have to, the pacing, it's a hard thing to pull off.
Yeah, so. Yay, Scary Mermaid.
Yeah, please come to the event.
Please come, May it's gonna 4th. Be so much fun. I'm so excited. Let's see. I read a bunch of Alma Katsu's books. She was on the podcast.
Nice.
Really fun. I read The Hunger, which is, you know, the Donner Party horror.
Ooh.
Super fun. Super good. And then I read Red Widow and Red London, which are her crime thrillers.
Nice.
Really, really good. You can listen to that. That interview is up. I also read the new Meryl Wilsner romance. It's called Cleat Cute. It is a soccer romance, a sapphic soccer romance. It's adorable.
Was it an ER? Do you have? Okay. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yep. It's an ER. It's real cute.
ER.
It's real cute. It's a soccer romance. Sweet. And that's
love
all you
it.
Need to know. It's a sapphic soccer
love
romance.
It.
Another novella that I read and adored is called Thornhedge by T. Kingfisher.
Okay.
This comes out later this year. It's so stinking cute. It's a Sleeping Beauty tale, but from a very different perspective. So there's this little, like fairy creature who can also become a little frog kind of toad thing form. And this little creature is the one who put Sleeping Beauty under sleeping spell. But she did it for very good reason.
Huh.
Because the Sleeping Beauty in this story is a changeling.
Oh.
And she's real dangerous.
Oh.
And if she were to wake up, she would destroy the world.
Oh, I like this.
It's great. So the story is told from this perspective of this little, like, fairy creature who meets, like, a knight.
Nice.
Who's like, oh, I heard that there was, like, a princess who needed saving. And she's like, maybe don't.
Do that.
And he's like, I'm going to do it. And then, but then they become, like, friends.
Yeah.
And you learn kind of the whole backstory and all of this. It's really cute. It's super short. I think I read it in, like, 2 days. It is just delightful. And I just want to, like, keep this little fairy in my pocket. Like, aww, she's so cute. Yeah, and it was a really fun twist on Sleeping Beauty, which there have been a lot of, you know, interesting takes on fairy tales recently, and I really loved this one in that the princess wasn't the main character.
Yeah.
And then speaking of fairies, I finally read Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies. You're welcome, Elizabeth. You're welcome, Billy Anna. I read it. I loved it. Of course.
Yeah.
It's great. It's, you know...
So
we don't need to, like, go into great detail because Elizabeth has done that for us many times.
Yeah.
It is as delightful as she says. It's very, very cute.
Nice.
A romantic novel, not necessarily a romance, but romantic and, you know, just epistolary, but in just a really fun and silly kind of way. And
nice.
The characters are awesome.
I love that. So one of my other big recovery books, was The Shadow Cabinet by Juno Dawson.
Yes!
It was so good. It was so good, y'all. So, for those who don't know, this is the follow-up to Her Majesty's Royal Coven, which came out last year. Ryan and I did an interview with Juno about the book. It is it's such a great world. In this world, there are there's magic, and women have more magic than men.
Yes.
In the first book, we're introduced to some characters who are trying to deal with what they think is an apocalyptic situation because they find a child who they believe to be male who has too much power. And it is just this beautiful, perfect little trans witch book. I love it. So this is the second one in the trilogy. And it's just, it was, again, really good, like a really good second book in a trilogy. It follows some of the characters you know from the first book, but it also introduces new characters, or characters that maybe were mentioned but not gone into in detail. And it really complicates your understanding of characters that you thought you knew.
I love that.
And it's, I think, I wrote in my notes, messy in the best way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it gets messy, and it makes these the characters get messy and difficult, but you still really like them.
Yeah.
And I think it just, yeah, just a great queer fantasy, witchcraft, hidden society book. And yeah, I can't wait to read the last one. I can't wait for this one to come out and continue to hand sell this series to everyone because it's so good.
Yay.
Love, love, love that. Oh, one of the other ones, this one's like slightly off the path that I, slightly different than others that I read. I read Raw Dog, The Naked Truth About Hot Dogs by Incredible. Jamie Loftus.
Obsessed.
So some people may know Jamie Loftus. She does a lot of podcasts. She did a podcast called Lolita Podcast, really good look at the cultural history of Lolita. Looks, yeah, does deep dives into things. Fantastic. And this, I believe, started as a podcast project and turned into a book.
Cool.
It is partially a cultural history of hot dogs, part memoir. It is, I keep referring to it as the socialist hot dog book. it's so interesting looking to like the class dynamics in hot dogs. And she is so funny. It is so funny. I'm going to read a quick review that she posted on her Instagram because it's incredible. Unfortunately, I did not see much real humor in this book. I'm not familiar with Jamie Loftus's humor, but it seemed like what was supposed to be intended as humor, sorry, this person didn't write this very well, was just vitriol from a very unhappy, foul-mouthed lady. The author also brought a lot of sexual innuendo into the book, pretty coarsely, while mostly sleeping alone, although traveling with her partner. This is, like, literally her announcement of, like, the cover of the book. And she's, like, there are multiple, like, negative reviews about, like, how this book is way too horny and, like, weird and not funny. And, like, you're just watching this sad lady break up with her boyfriend across America. Because that's the premise, is she and her boyfriend are traveling across America to try the best hot dogs in the country.
Oh, my God.
She's obviously at Coney Island on the 4th of July to watch Joey Chestnut just destroy some hot dogs. It's, yeah.
Oh,
so,
my God.
I love Jamie. I was really excited to see that she was writing a book, and I was really excited to love the book because you, especially very different mediums, podcasting and book writing. So it was great to see that she was kind of able to navigate that, and I'm excited to see everything else that she does. Let me think of other quick ones that I read The Dawn Hounds by Sasha Stronach. This is, I first heard about it. It was the book that Freya Marsk recommended during our event back in November that she had been reading and really loved. It is a queer Maori-inspired sci-fi.
Oh my god.
Yeah, like, this book is so good, and it's like one of those books that flew under the radar and it's just been a word of mouth thing, but there are gay pirates. The houses are alive. They're mushrooms, and like,
this has everything.
It has everything. It is incredible. It has very strong Guards by Terry Pratchett vibes. Like, it's funny and cute and interesting and and like, it's hard to even get into the plot, but it is also the main character is a member of the City Watch and starts to learn about the corruption within this organization and working to working outside the system, starting to join up with these queer pirates. And there's like a cute little romance in it too. It's so good.
Oh my god. I feel like you need to write a review as Stefan from SNL.
This book has everything.
This book has everything.
It really does.
That's amazing.
And it is, and it's the first in, I believe, a trilogy, but at least it's a series. I know there's a second one coming. And
what was the title of
that? The Dawn Hounds.
The Dawn Hounds. Okay.
And yeah, it's just like kind of subtle little cover, like and really beloved by Tamsin Muir, who wrote
Gideon.
Like, it has some good people who are recommending it. So definitely, if you're a sci-fi person, if you're a Terry Pratchett person specifically, like, go for this. Go for that. And then, I really only have left are the two that I'm currently reading.
All right. Well, I have a chunk more that I can do.
Okay, go ahead.
So I absolutely devoured Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus. She was on the podcast, which that episode isn't up yet, listeners, it will be soon. Because as of recording this, I have started writing my intro for it. The interview's done. I just need to post it. That book was awesome. Women in STEM. She is a scientist who is let go from her job because she is pregnant out of wedlock.
Ooh.
She's pregnant out of wedlock because the father of her child died. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. And she, through a series of events, becomes the host of her own cooking show.
Yeah.
But she has her own spin on it. She basically, the producers are like, we want you to say this and do this and look like that. And she's like, no. I'm going to teach women science, but also I'm going to teach them how to, like, subvert society. It's great. She is
such good things.
Delightful. Bonnie Garmus was so much fun to talk to. What a wonderful human. Highly recommend that. That's one that Sam really, really loved.
Yeah, and it's one of those books where I feel like the cover didn't quite capture it, because it has a very, like, hot pink cover with just a, like, illustration of a woman's face.
Yeah.
And so for a very long time, I just kind of walked by and was like, oh, okay. Like, it's a contemporary, maybe romance-y sort of book. Which isn't my genre. And then Sam put it in her best books of the year list, and I was like, okay, wait, tell me more. What?
Yeah,
and she's like, oh yeah, no, it's like, it's incredible.
Great.
So
it is great. So definitely read that one. A couple little romances that I listened to back. Anna Takes Manhattan by Lizette Dekos. Anna is like a producer or director for not a reality show, but like a show where they follow a person, like one half of a couple, as they plan an engagement.
Huh.
And then they film the engagement. And so Anna's job is to like set up these like utterly perfect, over the top proposals. It opens with this like picture perfect, incredible proposal that just goes horribly wrong. And what follows is Anna being like, wait, what is my life? What am I doing with my life? What do I want out of life? Do I want one of these giant proposals? Like, she doesn't.
Yeah.
So she just is kind of, it's very much like a, not quite midlife crisis because she's very young, but it's like that type of like, wait, who am I? What am I doing? Type of books. But then she meets someone and it's very cute. So there's that one. That was very sweet. And then I also read one called Out of Character by Annabeth Albert. We were talking about D&D earlier. This is like a D&D-esque romance novel. It is, it's a queer romance and it's so wholesome. It's this guy who works at like a comic book store and his like high school bully comes in to the comic book store. And so like the kid who works at the comic book store is like, ugh, what is he doing here? And like, the bully is like, hey, you sell, like, this type of card, right? Like, picture, think of, like, Pokemon cards. Yeah. But, like, fancier. Like, Magic the Gathering.
Magic the Gathering, that's, yeah.
And the kid's like, uh-huh. And he's like, cool, cool. I need this one and this one. And the kid's like, do you have $10,000? Even if you did, we don't carry those. Those are, like, two of the rarest cards in existence. And the kid, the other guy, like, fully just, like, ashen-faced walks out. He's like, okay. And so the kid's like, that was weird. I feel like I'm being punked. Like, is he just doing this to mess with me? Like, did someone send him in on a dare? Like, what's going on? No, come to find out, like, the bully accidentally gambled away his brother's prize cards.
Oh.
Like, didn't realize they were rare. He was playing this game, which is basically Magic the Gathering, but for the purpose of the story, is not. He was playing this game against someone who took advantage of him, and so he lost these very expensive cards. Mm-hmm. Did not realize they were very expensive. So the kid who works in the comic book store is like, okay, are you like really serious about this? And the guy's like, I will do anything. I need these cards. And he's like, all right. They begin a quest.
Okay.
To find these cards because in exchange, the comic book kid is like, all right, you are going to cosplay in my group because you look exactly like this Prince Neptune character from this thing. And we do cosplay at a local hospital and we lost our prince. Like, he can't do it right now. And you look exactly like him. So you'll do that for me and I'll help you get these cards. And he's like,
nice.
Okay. And what follows is the most adorable little romance, this budding romance between these two characters. And it's so sweet. It is really, really cute. If you like cosplay, if you like, you know, RPGs and Magic the Gathering and like that type of thing, like, this book is so stinking cute. Aww. I loved it so much. So that one, again, Out of Character by Annabeth Albert, super duper cute. Another very sweet romance novel that I just read, and again, this interview, if not up yet, listeners, will be up soon, I promise. It's called Kismet by Becky Chalson. And it is very beach read type romance. It takes place on this little island off of, I think, Long Island. It's a real place. It's Kismet Fire Island. It's a real place.
Oh, okay. Fire Island. Yeah. Okay.
And it is like family drama, and this woman is, she's there for her sister's wedding. Her twin sister is getting married on their birthday, and she's like real mad about it. Yeah. She's like, really? My birthday? Really? Our birthday? Like, you're making this all about you? Okay, fine. And like, she and her husband have been going through something. There's some tension there. You don't know why yet. And while she's there, the best man shows up. And the best man is someone that she had a fling with in college. And no one knows they had a fling. She and her husband are high school sweethearts.
Oh, no.
They took a break in college, and she had a fling with this guy. And now here he is. And she's like, her marriage is on the rocks. And here's this, like, guy that she has this unresolved, you know, feelings for. It is, there's, like, so much sexual tension. There's, like, really kind of nuanced conversations about sisterhood and family. And ultimately, it is about kind of, like, realizing what you have. And, and, you know, why, like, why you should, like, fight for the things that you have and things like that. What's fun is that, so, you know, the main character is a twin. Becky Chalson is one of four. She's a quadruplet.
Oh, wow.
Her husband is a twin.
Wild.
yeah, it is. She grew up going to Kismet Fire Island. She, yeah, there's... talk about write what you know. Like, she wrote what she knows. It's really, really cute. Her husband is her high school sweetheart. Cute. Like, it is so sweet. It is just, like, a really good beach read.
Yeah.
I also just finished, I'm about to interview J. Ryden Straddle for Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club. So you guys will hear about this in my interview, which I'm doing tomorrow. But this book made me ugly cry. In my car.
Yeah.
It is gorgeous. It is bittersweet. It is heart-aching. It is really, really good. It deals with really difficult topics, particularly if you are a parent or if you have struggled with fertility. It tackles, you know, miscarriages, IVF, loss of a child, really, really hard subjects, but it also has really, really beautiful looks at family and generations and legacy and things like that. It follows mainly this one couple, but particularly the female protagonist, her, like, grandmother, her mother, and beyond, and their restaurant that their supper club that their family has owned for like 100 years, and it unfolds in a really cool way. It kind of bounces around in time. You'll get like a chapter about the grandmother from like the 50s, and then you'll get like a modern day chapter, and then you'll get like another chapter from like her mother from just, you know, a few years ago, things like that. It kind of unfolds in a really interesting way, and I loved it. It was really, really beautiful. So
nice.
Y'all will hear more about that in my interview. And then the last two are two books that I am basically feral about. The first, I got to read What Kind of Mother by Clay McLeod Chapman.
Oh, I know what the other one is too. Okay.
Yep. So, you know what? I think I might do what I did for Starling House, because I have been good and written my reviews for the next two books. So
proud of you.
I know. I'm so on top of it.
I am so behind on all of my reviews.
I mean, like, fair. You've also been hopped up on painkillers for 2 months, so I get it. Okay, so let's start with What Kind of Mother. This is by Clay McLeod Chapman, who wrote Ghost Eaters, which I also loved. So... my review is, Clay McLeod Chapman got me haunted with ghost eaters and has me crawling out of my skin with What Kind of Mother? Mm. A gorgeous and heartbreaking Southern Gothic folktale about the horrors of parenting and love gone too far. What Kind of Mother is drenched with love, with loss, with the screaming ache of a parent's worst nightmare, and then, can it be, a wish granted? But reader, be careful what you wish for. This book lures you in with false hopes and a gentle tide, and then flips your boat and drags you to the bottom of the river where the crabs are waiting to feast. Give me your hand and come with me into the murky depths of this horrifically beautiful novel. So again, this book deals with loss of a child. Mm. Clay's books often deal with a hard topic. Ghost mm. Eaters deals with addiction. This is the horrors of parenting. This is, but it has like this dark fairy tale aspect to it. It is really, really good and really creepy. And I am so excited for that. That comes out in like September. Like all, nice.
Yeah.
So many of these books come out in the fall. I'm so sorry. And then the other one is Black Sheep by Rachel Harrison, my girl. We joked last time she was on the podcast. It was, I think, her third time on the podcast. And we were like, so see you next September. And she was like, yep. And here we go. My review for Black Sheep. It's not easy being the black sheep of your family, especially when your family is made of religious extremists.
Yeah.
Rachel Harrison has gifted us a wicked novel about toxic family dynamics and the pressures of finding your path in life. This book is devilishly fun. It's for everyone who was raised by narcissists, for everyone with toxic family members, for everyone with religious trauma, for every black sheep. Mm. Reading this book felt like watching Eddie Munson shred Metallica in the Upside Down. Black Sheep rocks. Literally, like, the last, like, chapter or no, not even like the last like chunk of this book, I literally was like, this, the feeling that I have in my heart right now is exactly the same feeling I had watching Stranger Things and like watching Eddie in the Upside Down play guitar. Like, it was like so cathartic and so exciting and so like, you're nervous and you're like, what's gonna happen, but I'm loving this. And it's so good. It's so much fun. There are some great twists and turns in this one. I literally at one point said out loud, wait, what? I love everything Rachel's ever written. She is a dear friend. And this one is great. It's not super scary. Like, it definitely has scary moments. Mm-hmm. But I would say, like, if you are not super into horror, but you're into like dark books, this would be nice. Right up your alley. And I will pause there so that I have something to talk about on our next episode.
I know, I read so many books for the topic for our next episode, so like, I'm not even getting into half of it.
Yeah.
So I read a few YA and youth fiction books, and then I want to talk about the two books I'm currently reading. So the YA book I read was Enter the Body by Joy McAuliffe. Mm. This was a present from our bookseller, Heather, who is lovely, and she gave it to me as my, like, something to entertain me. It is a YA novel in verse. It is set in the trap room underneath the stage at the Globe Theater.
Oh my God.
And so it is about, the characters are Shakespeare's women who have died, and they fall through the trap door, and they're in this under stage area.
Whoa.
And they start telling each other their stories and what. Whoa. Yeah,
that's so cool.
It's really cool, and it's a novel in verse. It's a really quick read, really well done, and I'm interested. The same author has a retelling of Little Women, which, cool, you know, truly, yeah, my vibes. Little Women, Shakespeare, fantastic.
Amazing.
So that one was really good. I read two youth, one is a YA graphic novel, Firebird by Sun Me. It is a really heartfelt story about two queer Asian American teenagers. Mm-hmm. And just, like, it's just sweet and warm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's difficult in spots, but, like, yeah, it was really well done. The illustrations are really fantastic. And then the youth fiction graphic novel I read was Freestyle by Gail Galligan, I don't know if you remember. They were at the conference we went to this fall and was super cute. Yeah. And this is just absolutely an adorable book. It is about a boy named Corey who just, all he wants to do is practice with his dance crew. They have a competition coming up. But he's not doing well in school, and his parents insist that he get a tutor. And so he's stuck with this girl who's just, he doesn't want to be there. She's not very cool. Like, she just wants to study. Like, doesn't she ever have any fun? And then he catches her doing yo-yo tricks. And he's like, oh my god, you have to teach me. And she's like, okay, but you have to actually participate in tutoring.
Oh my god.
And they're just so cute.
That's so cute.
It's super sweet and fun, and yeah, just really good youth fiction graphic novel. Aww. And then the two books that I'm currently reading, I'm listening to Men, Women, and Chainsaws, Gender in the Modern Horror Film by Carol J. Clover.
Yes, please.
This is the book that coined the term Final Girl. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh.
So this is from the 90s, and it is kind of wild listening to it because you're like, oh my god, Scream doesn't exist. Oh my god, Laurie Strode is still dead in the Halloween universe. Oh my god, Jason hasn't gone to space. Like,
oh my god, I need this.
It's just such an interesting time. You're like, oh, so much has changed. Like, just thinking, like, there's no Ari Aster in this, like, world that she's writing
so
about.
Much yet,
like,
to come.
Yeah, and how much I think contemporary horror is, like, there's a lot that's responding to this book. Obviously, the Final Girl trope, like, like Stephen Graham Jones read this book.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And so yeah, it is really interesting. Looks into possession films, so Exorcist.
I love a possession film.
Things like that. The slasher, The Final Girl. That's the first chapter. Some sexual assault revenge films, and kind of goes into kind of that low culture and looks at what it's doing, why it's interesting, and how what it's saying about our society. I will say some trigger warnings for the 90s, basically.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot about, you know, gender transgression and gender fluidity that I think the author is handling respectfully for the time, but definitely uses language that we would not be using now. So I just, you know, tread carefully for ableism and transphobia and particular homophobia. But again, I don't think it's coming from, I think it's just the time it was written in.
Yeah.
But yeah, really liking that. I love reading about horror, and it's a good one for our prompt about reading a book about cultural criticism, or a book of cultural criticism.
Yeah.
And then the novel that I'm reading right now is The Biography of X by Catherine Lacey.
Mm.
This book is wild. it is a faux biography, but, like, it takes it so far. It's like, yeah, Catherine Lacey saw, like, Daisy Jones and the Six and all of these, like, books about, like, artists and musicians from the past and was like, okay, hold my beer. Here I am. So it is about the widow of a artist from the 70s who's only went by the name of X. Okay. She was a writer, a musician, like art painting, like artist, just everything. And this world is an alternate history. In 1946, the southern states seceded from the U.S. and built a wall.
Oh my God.
Around themselves. And then the rest of the U.S. split into a western territory and a northern territory. And when the ex's widow is doing her research for this book, they have just started reunification.
Oh.
She finds out her wife, who she thought she knew, she knows nothing about. And she was actually born in the Southern Territory and escaped, which is not a thing that they thought was possible.
Dang.
And so she just goes on this wild journey of trying to learn who her wife is. And it is, her wife is an asshole. Ryan, you can bleep that. But, like, that's what she learns. Her wife is not great. She learns about their relationship. And, yeah, she's not a very lovable character. It has so many good, like, 70s references. You know, it's casually dropped that X actually was the one who wrote Heroes, Bowie's, like, best song.
Oh my God.
But was involved in the Berlin triptych, his like three albums he did in Berlin, and which, you know, obviously it's speaking to me specifically.
Definitely.
It has photographs in it that are supposedly photographs of the people in the book. It also does this absolutely wild thing that I don't know if I've ever seen a book do before, where you just like read it. There will be quotes from articles or whatever talking about X, but there will also just be like, you know, sections that whatever, it's written as a normal page. You go to the notes and it's quotes. So it's like pulling from interviews talking about other people, but quoting it, making it about, it's wild. It is wild. And so there will be sentences that'll just be like, this character says this, and then you flip to the back and you're like, oh wait, that was Susan Sontag. Or,
wow.
Yeah. It's so weird. It's such a weird book. And it, like, again, it goes so hard. It has its own, like, copyright page for the book. It came out in 2005 for, you know, the author. It has the, like, pages at the beginning and the end are, it starts black and they get lighter, and then it's the book, and then it goes light to dark again at the end. It is, like, this gorgeously constructed book. And I have to say, it is, and this is just probably me being me, but, like, it's making me think about David Bowie a lot, and, like, thinking about constructions of identity and, like, what this means and what these lines between art and life, and if that matters, what does it mean?
Yeah.
Are these people, these identities we construct, real? Where are those lines? And it is fascinating and so strange, and
sounds so interesting.
Yeah, it's, and I've been reading it very slowly because it's just this wild book, and it is, yeah, it's gorgeously constructed, and it's so interesting, and there are just like little things of like different changes to history that you're like, oh wait, hold on, what? Because like, you know, her wife dies in the 90s, but like gay marriage is legal in the Northern Territories, so yeah, it's,
wow,
it's a weird book, and I'm really liking it.
This feels like the type of book that we would see on like the Booker,
yes, that list. I am kind of feeling like I could see it being at least long listed for the Booker, and it was a book that I was like, Reagan, here you go. I described it to our coworker Sam. I was like, so it's about an artist from the 70s who Hillary would have hung out with. Like,
yes,
it just absolutely is, like, yes, there are overlaps with people that Hillary had overlaps, absolutely, with our former co-host, yes, Hillary, who we adore and has some wild stories from New York in the 70s and, like, the punk scene. So,
that's incredible. Yeah,
so weird, so wild, loving it.
This also is, like, giving me, like, House of Leaves vibes, except yes, not horror.
Yeah, and it's, like, it's a little bit less, like, you're never gonna turn the book upside down sort of thing, right, but, like, yeah, it's just this weird puzzle of a book that, like, you believe you're reading one thing, and then, like, you go to the notes, and you're like, hold on, wait a second. It's just weird, weird book.
Well, I am intrigued.
Yeah.
I am intrigued. Yeah. That sounds awesome. Wow.
Wow.
We did it.
We did a lot. we read a lot of books.
We did read a lot of books. And we will also have a regular episode this month.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have Heather on. We're going to talk about YA horror.
I love it. I love YA horror. I, you know, Ryan's our queen of scream, but I love, like, YA horror is, like, where I can shine a little bit because I read a lot of it and it's really good. And there's a lot of, like, great queer YA horror out there.
Yeah. Yeah. YA horror is having a moment.
Yeah.
And I'm here for it.
Yeah. Loving it and getting a lot of kids coming in asking for it. And I'm like, okay, what level are we talking? Do you want, like, spooky vibes or do you want, like, oh my God?
You're right.
Terrifying. So it's gonna be great.
We're gonna have such a good list for you when that comes out.
No, I already made a Libro FM list. I meant to email you of, like, because I almost always listen to them.
Yeah.
So, anyway,
incredible. So definitely tune in for that. Again, I have, you know, lots of author interviews that have happened, so make sure you're catching up on those. Now into the credits. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. For a shoppable list of all the books we've discussed during this episode, you can click the link in our show notes or go to gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. Make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. All of those links will be in the show notes. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye! Bye.